and a good Friday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Don't forget that you can take the show with you 24/7 by checking out our podcast. It's available wherever you get your shows. Just search for it in your favorite podcast app and listen along throughout the day. You can also text into the show this morning, whether you're watching live or after the fact. Our text in line, 910-377-6425. That's 910-377-6425. Well, today a big day across the country, expecting or potentially a government shutdown coming up later on this evening. At least that's what it looked like as we worked through the better part of the week. Covered earlier, of course, the House moving forward with their continuing resolution, their CR bill that was in fact backed by President Donald Trump. And then that put the ball in Chuck Schumer and the Democrats' hands in the Senate. Now, initially, what we had heard from Chuck Schumer, who is the Democrat minority leader in the U.S. Senate, was that they weren't going to pass the CR. They were not going to go forward and work with the Republicans to pass this bill. Now, I'm not saying the CR is perfect. I don't think it is. I would argue that no continuing resolution is ever perfect, or maybe even great. I might give it a meh to good rating. But it keeps the government funded and it allows Trump to continue on his agenda, which I think I would argue, and I'm sure many of you feel the same way, has been highly effective in the, 55 some odd days that he's been in office at this point. Highly, highly effective with President Trump. So this put Chuck Schumer and the Democrats in a very, very precarious situation. Right? Because it's the Democrat Party that's always talking about democracy and unity and working across the aisle and blurring the lines of partisanship in Washington, D.C. Right? They're always the ones preaching this ad nauseum to the American people. And so they had a shot and do still have a shot to do just that, to put the partisan politics beside themselves, ignore the partisanship, and pass the CR. Now, we heard from Chuck Schumer Wednesday that there was not a chance in hell that this was going to go forward. He was not going to vote in favor of this. He was not going to move forward with the continuing resolution. That's what he said. But it appears to me that old Chucky Schumer, who I don't agree with politically, of course, but Chuck Schumer's not a stupid guy. Chuck Schumer knows the political game. He's been in it long enough to understand how this game is played. And he understood, and we talked a little bit about this yesterday, or maybe it was Wednesday. He understood that if Democrats in the United States Senate did not vote in favor of this continuing resolution, there was no amount of media spin, there was no amount of carrying of the water for the Democrat Party that was going to go on in cable news like MSNBC and CNN or even the national outlets, CBS, ABC, NBC. There was not enough for them to carry the water for the Democrats. This shutdown would have solely been placed at their feet, as it should have been. They are the ones, if they were to not vote for this, they would be the ones shutting down the government. Republicans have majorities in the House and the Senate. The CR passed the House. They need 60 votes for it to pass in the Senate. And so if there is one group, one individual to blame, if it doesn't hit 60 votes, it's Chuck Schumer and it's the Democrats. I mean, there's no way else around it. They can try and claim that the bill sucks and that, you know, Trump is a dictator and orange man bad, all that they want, right? Continue with their ridiculous characterization of Trump and the administration. But the fact is very clear. Democrats did not support this bill, therefore government shut down. There's a very easy parallel to draw between the two. Democrats didn't do this, and the end result was government was shut down. And so with that, it appears that Chuck Schumer, who, again, I don't think is a stupid guy. I think he knows what he's doing. He knows the political game. He's between a rock and a hard place. What does he do? Because if he encourages his delegation of Democrats in the Senate to vote for the CR, he gives Trump a win. He allows the government to stay operational, and there is zero way that there can be any criticism of Trump and the Republicans for shutting the government down, which there would be, still be plenty. But overall, you would not be able to point at Trump, point at the Republicans, and say it's their fault. Plenty of criticism, sure. But at the end of the day, it wouldn't be their fault. And so Schumer says that, in fact, he is now going to support the CR. He's caving in support of Trump's backed continuing resolution that originated in the U.S. House, and he is going to support it and is encouraging his colleagues to do so in the Senate. Here's Chuck Schumer yesterday on the Senate floor talking about just this.
Republican rejection leads us to a decision. And it's not really a decision. It's a Hobson's choice. Either proceed with the bill before us or risk Donald Trump throwing America into the chaos of a shutdown.
Now, I'm going to stop old Chucky Schumer right there. You really can't blame Trump for throwing you into a shutdown. If Trump is the president, his party has the majority in the House and the Senate. He is going to move forward and work forward with his legislation, his backed continuing resolution. You guys are the ones that have the choice to make. You either cave to Trump, cave to the Republicans and vote in favor of the CR, or shut the government down. And as I've stated in the past, I don't really care either way. I'm not going to lose any sleep whether the government is shut down or not. I'm very much looking forward to heading to a Pi Day party tonight on this March the 14th. I am not going to have my Friday night derailed because I'm panicking, scrolling through Twitter. Oh my God, is the government going to shut down? I'm going to have a couple beers and sleep like a baby tonight, and it's going to be irregardless of whether the government shuts down or not, whether Democrats in the U.S. Senate vote in favor of it or not. I literally could not care less. So this idea that, oh my God, this is just this bill, this idea. We don't have a choice. No, you very clearly have a choice. Shut the government down if you guys are standing on your principles. If you're standing on your Democrat morals, shut the damn government down then. Why are you guys caving to Trump? Why are you caving to Orange Man Bad here? You guys are la resistance, right? Why are you caving to old Donnie Boy here? What's going on, Chuck? What's happening?
This, in my view, is no choice at all. While the CR bill is very bad, the potential for a shutdown has consequences for America that are much, much worse.
I disagree.
For sure, the Republican bill is a terrible option. It is not a clean CR. It is deeply partisan. It doesn't address far too many of this country's needs, but I believe allowing Donald Trump to take even much more power via a government shutdown is a far worse option.
Ah.
And before I explain why, let me be clear about one thing. No one on my side of the aisle wants a government shutdown. Members who support this CR do not want a government shutdown. Members who oppose this CR do not want a government shutdown.
Well, here's the thing. You cannot want a government shutdown, but if you're not going to vote in favor of the continuing resolution, then you are, in fact, wanting a government shutdown. I mean, this is a very binary choice. Ones and zeros. You either vote for it and the government stays open, or you vote against it and the government shuts down. Very binary here. There's not much room for any sort of interpretation of what's happening here. If Democrats don't vote, it's going to shut down. And Chuck Schumer is now in favor of it. He says that a government shutdown is worse because he understands the political optics of this. And this is truly what I believe this is all around. He makes the claim, I don't want to give Trump any more power with the shutdown, blah, blah, blah. It's got nothing to do with that. This is simply PR for Chuck Schumer and the Democrats. And to his credit, this is a smart move on his behalf. The Democrat Party, who just got shellacked in November of last year, who had a majority of the American voting population say, you guys have ideas that we don't support. We don't want to work with you guys. We don't think your ideas are any good. Voters just said that less than 6 months ago. And so the media coverage of Democrats not voting for the CR and shutting down the government would be disastrous for the Democrat Party. A party right now that is very much on its back heels. I'm not going to understate this. The Democrat Party is suffering from a crisis right now. As you and I speak this morning, the Democrat Party is trying to figure out what they need to do going forward. The Democrat Party is completely scattered right now. They don't know what messaging works. They don't know what ideas resonate with the American people. They are completely lost. And they cannot afford the bad PR from them shutting down the government out of the U.S. Senate. They just can't afford it. They're not popular. They're not in the good graces of the American people. This would be a PR nightmare for Chuck Schumer and the Democrats. And as I noted, kudos to him. He understands the game. He understands what's going on. And so he's bending the knee to Trump and the Democrats. There's no other way around it. And I'm okay with that. I don't have any issues with what he's doing at all. I think it's the smart political move. And he continued more into his thoughts on the continuing resolution, more on his thoughts into a potential shutdown as a whole.
Believe it is my job to make the best choice for the country to minimize the harms to the American people. Therefore, I will vote to keep the government open and not shut it down.
How brave.
There is nobody in the world, nobody, who wants to shut the government down more than Donald Trump and more than Elon Musk. We should not give it to them. And make no mistake, Democrats will continue to fight what Donald Trump is doing. Everything that Trump, Musk, and Republicans have done so far has a clear goal. Again, cutting taxes for billionaires, eviscerate Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. This is the fight that matters most and the fight we must focus on. All the chaos we have seen, all the lawlessness, all the grift and corrupt behavior. It's all about rigging the system.
Ah, yes.
In favor of the ultra wealthy at the expense of working Americans. This is the fight the American people need to see. This is the fight that Democrats will win. A shutdown will be a costly distraction from this all-important fight.
There you go. There's the quiet part out loud right there. Chuck Schumer knows they can't. They will have zero leverage if they shut the government down at all. But I do find his, word this tastefully? His interpretation, let's use that word. His interpretation of what he believes Trump is doing and what Elon Musk is doing, cutting taxes for billionaires, rigging the system, helping the ultra wealthy. I think Democrats may need to go back and do a little bit of analysis on what's going on in the country right now. It might be beneficial for them to just go back and take a look at what's going on and see what the American people actually think about it. I don't suspect that the vast majority of the American public agrees with the assertions made there by old Chucky Schumer. I just don't think that's the case at all. Now, that's his prerogative. He's allowed to have whatever opinion he wants. But I don't think that characterization is accurate. And I don't think most people look at what Trump's doing and has done in the last 50 days and go, yeah, you know what? He's just helping billionaires. When you've got his cabinet pick like Lee Zeldin out of EPA, who earlier this week had the biggest amount of regulatory reform that he claims, and it's probably true, that the federal government has ever seen with the hacking and slashing going on over at EPA. How does that help the ultra wealthy? How does that help the billionaires that Chuck Schumer and Democrats always claim? That's all Republicans stand for. Billionaires and millionaires. When government cuts regulation, things get done quicker and more efficiently. You know who can afford to wait on the government to slow walk building permits? Wealthy people. Individuals that have disposable income that can wait out the storm while either a federal, state, or local government twiddles their thumbs and slow walks things like building permits. You know who can't afford that? The middle class. Individuals that are in desperate need of housing. Individuals that are looking to move into a single family home. They're waiting for this new development to pop up. But, you know, it's going to take 6 years because there's some benign slug or some nonsense that exists on that property. And the EPA's got to come in and do a complete and thorough analysis to check out this slug and see what it does. See if it's an integral part of our ecosystem before a house can be built. Some millionaire, he don't care. He's got plenty of cash. It doesn't matter to him. The middle-class family that's trying to get out of the two-bedroom apartment and into a house, they care. It actually affects them. Democrats can't seem to wrap their head around this. It doesn't really hit home with the Democrats. So his characterization there, I think, is absolutely spot off. Not even close. And then old Chuckie Schumer goes on MSNBC to justify his actions of keeping the government open, bending the knee, caving to Orange Man Bad and Donald Trump. And this is how he characterizes it with MSNBC. Take a listen.
To have the conflict on the best ground we have summed up in a sentence that they're making the middle class pay for tax cuts for billionaires. It's much, much better not to be in the middle of a shutdown, which to divert people from the number one issue we have against these bastards, which is not only all these cuts, but they're ruining democracy.
They're ruining democracy. Oh, boy. And when is that going to come out of phase? The number one issue we have against these bastards in Washington, D.C. These damn bastards. They're ruining democracy. You guys tried that, right? Like, the whole Trump is a threat to democracy thing, you guys ran the entire 2024 election on that. The entire campaign was Trump and Republicans are a threat to the democracy. Trump not only won the Electoral College, but won the popular vote. When do you retire that term and move on to something else? Mud democracy that is always being screamed by the left is another talking point that has just lost all of its steam. I mean, it's no different than any of the other things in the past. Trump and Republicans, they're racist, they hate women, they hate this group, they're xenophobic. I mean, it's just on and on for almost a decade now. None of this stuff works. This poor, shameless messaging from the Democrat Party does not hit home with the American people, yet for whatever reason, they're still running with it. If your messaging, I'm speaking to Chuck Schumer and the Democrats now, if your messaging of Trump being a threat to democracy was successful and worked, he would not have won the popular vote. He would have not won the Electoral College. It is blatantly obvious to me. I don't have a political science degree. I don't have my doctorate in poli-sci. I don't need one. You can look at the messaging that Democrats have rolled out and did roll out last year against Trump. The biggest was threat to democracy. And you can see that it obviously didn't work. The fear-mongering of saying that over and over again does not hit with the American public, obviously. Move on to something else. Find some other new term to use to attack Trump and the Republicans. Guys, this ain't it. I can promise you this ain't it. It's not working. If I was a Democrat, I would be so pissed off right now with what's going on within my party. I would be livid as to how the Democrats are handling themselves nationally right now. They are failing on every single issue that they touch. Whether it's diversity, equity, and inclusion, guys and women's locker rooms, and now the shutdown. They're just falling flat on their face with everything that they touch. And it is giving Trump and the Republicans win after win after win. I would be livid if I was a card-carrying Democrat and was watching this unfold at the national stage. Because everything that is being telegraphed by the left, all of the discussion and the conversation that's happening on MSNBC and CNN, nobody's listening to it. They're completely tuning it out. They have no interest in the discussion at all. And so if I was a Democrat, I'd be encouraging my party to transition into something that's substantive. Something that will actually hit and work and resonate with the American public. Because this garbage is not. You can't call this guy a threat to democracy for a decade. He's already been the president once. He served 4 years. Another guy came in after him, destroyed the freaking country, and now he's back. If he was such a threat to democracy, the United States wouldn't exist anymore. Trump was out of office from 2020 up until January of this year. If he was the evil boogeyman threat to democracy that you guys yell and scream about 24/7, the country would cease to exist. We would no longer have a United States of America. But it didn't. There was another guy that, I say, ran the show, I'll put that in air quotes, ran the show for 4 years. He failed miserably under so-called democracy. Of which I would like to remind you again, we're not a democracy, we're a democratic republic. There is a difference, but for argument's sake, we'll continue to use this talking point. The threat to democracy stuff just doesn't work. Sorry, Chuck. Back to square one. So, government shutdown was expected at midnight tonight. The Democrats in the U.S. Senate understand it is a politically unbelievably toxic for them. And, well, you've got individuals now within the Democrat Party that are really upset about this. Even as Chuck Schumer says the bill is very bad. Here's a comment from Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, our favorite Starbucks barista. Quote, I cannot underscore enough how incorrect that is in regards to Schumer's argument. What voting for this CR does is it codifies the chaos and the reckless cuts that Elon Musk has been pursuing, the robbing of our federal government in order to finance tax cuts for billionaires in what is happening. And this is what Senate Democrats will be empowering if they vote for the CR. It's obvious that the talking points about the tax cuts for billionaires got out there. Representative Bonnie Watson Coleman, a Democrat out of New Jersey, wrote on X, respectfully, Senator Schumer, no. This Republican bill is bad for workers, bad for our veterans, bad for our seniors. Republicans should pull it and let us get back to crafting a budget that works for all of our families. Well, that sure as hell isn't going to happen, Representative Coleman. You guys lost, we won, we're in charge. So you can either vote for our stuff or sit on the sideline. We don't have to capitulate to you for you to come to the table. It's obvious. We don't have to work with you guys to get things done. We're going to put the pressure on you and you can sit out. You can plead ignorance and play dumb and play stupid as to how Republicans need to pull this bill so that Democrats can have a shot at it. No. You guys had your shot in November. You botched it. You blew it. So now we're in charge. Susan Rice, of all people, former U.S. ambassador, national security advisor during the Obama administration, said, WTF, Senator Schumer, please grow a spine and quickly. Representative Jasmine Crockett of Texas, another Democrat, said, it is clear that some of us understand the present danger and some don't. I stand by the no vote on the blank check for Trump and Elon. I've got no explanation or agreement with Senate Democrats being complicit in Trump's tyranny. Boy, ain't that interesting. So Chuck Schumer, who is a smart and savvy political operator, knows what's going on here, knows the details, knows how politically disastrous this would be for the Democrat Party. And you can see the radical wing, the AOCs, the Jasmine Crockett's of the party, this new young group of Democrats that are elected to Congress, these individuals understand, these individuals do not understand, that truly understand the political game. Because if they did, they would agree with Chuck Schumer. They would absolutely agree with Schumer. But they don't. And so now they're torching their own guy in the U.S. Senate because of what he's doing, what I believe is a very smart action by Chuck Schumer. You can text in your comments this morning at 910-377-6425. That's 910-377-6425. If you'd like to get your comments on the show this morning, looking forward to adding some, hopefully a call-in feature very soon as well. We'll start with texting. You can, of course, comment as well over on YouTube, Rumble, or X while the show is live, and we'll get to your comments as well throughout the show. Want to give a shout out to Joe from Shallot this morning, who checked in on our text message line while he was listening to the podcast yesterday afternoon. Joe, good morning to you. Thanks for listening and appreciate you texting in at 910-377-6425. All right, we'll grab a quick break. On the other side, the New Hanover County Board of Elections had a pretty rough go at it during the November election. There was a third-party audit that was conducted and has been ongoing over the last couple of months, and it has concluded its review. I'll have those details coming up here in just a few minutes. You're listening to The Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. And good Friday morning to you. Welcome back to The Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Don't forget that if you're interested in our daily show notes and you're interested in supporting the program, you can head on over to patreon.com/Nick Craig, where you'll get access to those daily show notes, as well as our monthly Google or our monthly Zoom chat that happens towards the end of the month. We'll be announcing that coming up next week. That is available for all of our Patreon members over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. Craig, appreciate everybody that has come aboard in the last 2 months and supported the show. I'm going to take you back to election night 2024, just back a couple of months ago. I was up in Raleigh doing some coverage with the great folks over at the Carolina Journal, and you know, polls close at what, 7:30, and then results start coming in. And so we had all of these counties starting to report their details, and New Hanover County was late, really late. You had 99 counties that had reported some data, whether it was some early voting data, some election day data. Every other county had reported their data. New Hanover County had not. And New Hanover County is a big county. Geographically, it's the second smallest. But in terms of population and specifically our voter makeup, it is a very influential county when we look at elections. This was because of issues with the New Hanover County Board of Elections. There was some questions, some concerns that the Board of Elections potentially broke state law and did not follow guidance from the State Board of Elections in the process of counting early votes. And so with that, you've had an external audit, that has been conducted, an independent review by the Parker Poe Law Firm. Their review has done, and they have concluded their review of the election boards, finding that the board was aware of the 2024 election statutory requirements. These would be coming from the State Board of Elections. However, the New Hanover County Board of Elections, under Ray Hunter Havens, the head there, set internal deadlines that conflicted with state law. I'll say it again. They set internal deadlines within the New Hanover County Board of Elections that conflicted with state law. And they knew that it conflicted with state law. The result of the audit, which New Hanover County requested, the county requested this, and allocated $30,000 to, were sent to commissioners and staff earlier this week on March the 10th. Parker Poe, the law firm, investigated the Board of Elections' decision to delay counting all absentee ballots received prior to Election Day on November 4th, as required by state law. Nearly 2,000 mail-in ballots remained for tabulation after Election Day. the board saying that they were acting under state guidance. Though the Board of Elections did not cooperate in the Parker Poe review, Ray Hunter Havens, the election director in New Hanover County, claimed in the days after the election to have implemented, quote, an administrative deadline with permission from the State Board of Elections. The State Board of Elections has denied that that happened. The report reads as follows. The North Carolina State Board of Elections acknowledged the error, attributing it to miscommunication rather than systematic staffing issues. The Board of Elections has stated that it did not have enough resources and staff locally to keep up with the unforeseen demands brought on by the 2024 election. However, Parker Poe's report states, noting in the firm's review, indicated that the earlier deadline was established because of staffing inadequacies. The report also indicates that there are no legal penalties for the deviation, as there are no criminal penalties associated with the statute. The only remedy, it states, would be to a participant that was negatively impacted by the delay. However, the report from the law firm notes no candidates could claim injury because all absentee ballots were eventually counted. Commissioner Dane Scalise did file a complaint, but the board dismissed his complaint because his dispute would have not changed the election tallies. The report states, quote, while all valid votes were ultimately counted, the failure to meet the statutory deadline for absentee ballot processing underscores the need for enhanced oversight, improved internal processes, and stronger communication between the New Hanover County Board of Elections and county administration. Addressing these issues proactively will help restore public trust and ensure full compliance in future elections. So this review is very clear. The New Hanover County Board of Elections knew that they were going against the statutory requirement with absentee by mail ballots, and they decided just to do it anyway. And because the requirement does not define any legal penalties, nobody's going to be held accountable. It's just a set of reviews. Oh, well, yeah, clean up this process and clean up that process. No, folks, when I say accountability, I mean accountability. The individuals that made this decision need to be reprimanded for. Now, I'm not necessarily stating it's termination. I don't know that necessarily the election director needs to be fired over this, but I think it's at least worth a discussion, no? New Hanover County is very influential in state politics. The outcome of statewide elections could have been decided in New Hanover. And because of their failure to count these ballots on time and in compliance with regulatory statutes from state law is a huge problem. It's a massive problem. It should not be understated. It's not water under the bridge. Spokesperson Alex Riley for the county told Port City Daily Thursday that Parker Poe's review was, quote, as complete as it could be without involvement from the Board of Elections. The report shows that Parker Poe emailed the director of the New Hanover County Board of Elections, Ray Hunter Havens, multiple times to ask for participation, which was denied every time they requested. Spokesperson Alex Riley added that staff is not aware of any unexplored items due to the Board of Elections' non-participation. Port City Daily reached out to Board Chair Derek Miller and Ray Hunter Havens about the report. Neither responded when this article was published yesterday. Part of Parker Poe's analysis was to provide 6 recommendations to improve the process at the Board of Elections, and I'd like to go through those with you this morning because I think they're pretty interesting. So let's jump into 1. Improve communication and oversight. Establish a structured, real-time communication process between the Board of Elections and county administration. Delegate assistant county manager as the primary liaison for election operations. And ensure direct engagement between the Board of Elections legal counsel and county attorneys to maintain a procedural alignment. So that's 1. 2. Strengthen absentee ballot processing. Improvement implement process improvements to guarantee that all absentee ballots received by the 7:30 p.m. deadline are reviewed and counted on election night. Provide enhanced training for election staff on absentee ballot procedures and compliance with state deadlines. Number three, conduct regular audits and legal reviews. Mandate comprehensive post-election audits to verify adherence to state election law, as well as engaging in public consultations on election rulemaking to foster transparency and voter confidence. Number four, enhance legal and administrative support. Continue utilizing experienced outside legal counsel while ensuring that the county's legal team remains actively involved in reviewing election procedures. Number five, invest in staff and technology. Request additional training from the North Carolina State Board of Election specifically focused on absentee ballot handling, as well as implementing advanced election management software to streamline staffing, inventory, and election supply tracking. And the sixth and final recommendation from this review is to review and fund resource requests. Carefully evaluate the New Hanover County Board of Election fiscal year 25-26 budget requests to ensure adequate allocation of resources necessary to address operational inefficiencies and meet statutory requirements. So let me just say this. This was a $30,000 audit that happened of the Board of Elections. Audit's probably a strong word, but a $30,000 review that happened of the Board of Elections. I'm glad that that review happened. While I don't love the county spending $30,000 on this, I think it's a worthwhile venture. But here's my issue. These six bullet points, which I'll have the link in the show notes over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. These six bullet points, where's the teeth in any of this? And I understand that Parker Poe, the outside counsel, the outside agency that conducted this, they don't have any sort of ability or any sort of power to mandate that the Board of Elections actually follow through on any of this. They don't. You know who does? The New Hanover County Board of Commissioners. Dane Scalise, Leanne Pierce, and Bill Rivenbark, the three Republicans, they have the ability to take this study, to take these recommendations, and force the Board of Elections to follow through on them. And folks, that's exactly what needs to happen. These studies are great. The findings are good. The recommendations seem like they're pretty common sense and pretty straight down the middle. But how many times do we see recommendations to government that are never followed? It is in one ear, out the other, immediately. So you've wasted money on having some sort of audit or study done because it's never followed through, because there's no way to compel them from the study. But I think the New Hanover County Board of Commissioners need to be very clear with the Board of Elections as this budget cycle comes up, and the Board of Elections is undoubtedly going to be looking for more money, undoubtedly looking for more resources. Hey, sure, we'll give you the money that you need. We'll give you the resources that you need, but this is the stuff that you need to follow. And we're going to give you these six recommendations. We're going to give you these six or seven things that you need to look at. And you're going to have to follow through on them. And we want to see the benchmarks. We want to see the metrics. This stuff actually needs to be done. There has to be some teeth put into this. This has to be done. There has to be some buy-in from the Board of Elections, because if not, the exact same thing is going to happen again. And we will, as taxpayers, have wasted $30,000 for a study to be conducted, for recommendations to be put together and information to be gathered, literally for nothing. Just so everybody can pat themselves on the back and say, hey, look at this. We conducted this review. Here are the recommendations. Well, how many of you followed? None. That's great. What the hell was the point of doing it in the first place? Why was money allocated and spent if nothing was going to happen with it? As for its sixth recommendation, the Board of Elections sent its enhancements request to the county last week. It's asking for three new full-time positions, three part-time administrative technicians, and a new election official and new election official management software. This amounts to upwards of $200,000. A salary is not listed for one of the full-time positions. So this is a major request from the Board of Elections. And I believe, and I am of the mindset, that they do need to have the resources and they do need to get the money that they deserve. But only if this stuff is followed. If you're not going to work off of these recommendations, and yes, getting new software, sure. That's the sixth recommendation. Everything else needs to be followed too. You can't just say, oh, well, we purchased some software at the tune of, you know, $150,000 and now our problem is solved. That was not the only recommendation. That was one of the last recommendations made by Parker Poe. Ray Hunter Havens accompanied the requests with a letter to address the study explaining how prior fiscal years presented many challenges to the Board of Elections, proving that the board can no longer rely on temporary workers to do the same extent as they have in the past due to increased and more complicated work. She wrote in a letter to the county commissioners, quote, over the last several years, the complexity and difficulty of conducting elections has greatly increased due to the combination of changes in election law and procedure, the makeup of available workforce for elections, and the growing volatile nature of elections themselves. As examples, Ray Hunter Havens points out new law concerning the makeup and appointments of state and county board election officials that has been changed by statute three times in the last 18 months. At one time this past fall, there were seven lawsuits seeking to significantly change or amend voting or registration procedures, she also noted. The Board of Election is also requesting nearly $20,000 for new software to manage election officials, assignments for early voting, as well as election day and inventory tracking. The application states that current technology is not meeting those needs effectively, as it is a piecemeal system that opens up staff to more errors. The transition to new software will take 4 to 8 weeks. That's encouraging. And the application states that it could be done before the 2025 municipal elections. And I hope the county commissioners fund that and provide them with that money. As for positions, the Board of Elections is seeking a voter service manager, with a net cost being a whopping $83,870 a year. The request states that the Board of Elections needs additional oversight and specialized work related to registration, absentee by mail, voting equipment, public records requests, finance, and payroll, as well as election audits. This person would also be at a high enough administrative level to run the Board of Elections in the director's absence. The application states, due to the growing complexity of election administration, we need to provide greater supervisory and administrative oversight of our internal processes to ensure full compliance with all laws. In addition, we need to ensure that we can provide the highest level of customer service in the event of department vacancies and increased demand of large election events. Another position requested is an elections registration coordinator with the cost of $62,585 a year. That position is necessary for the completion of all specialized programming work related to voter registration. The third full-time position submitted without a cost estimate is an elections education and communication coordinator. The justification for this, it says, this position would essentially be a communication officer charged with crafting messaging and material, responding to media, creating marketing materials, fostering ongoing public relations, maintaining the website and social media, and coordinating community planning. I don't think this position is necessary. The county itself already has a robust communications department. And, you know, we talk a lot about and have talked a lot about in the last couple of weeks about government efficiency and government redundancy. Communication from the government to the public is important. I'm not going to argue that at all. It's a vitally important role. But I'm not sure that the new Hanover County Board of Elections needs essentially its own PIO, public information officer. This work can and should be done by the county. They've already got the resources. They've already got the expertise. They've already got the software. They've got everything they need to do what the Board of Elections is talking about. There is no reason that this cannot be done within the county communications department. There's no way that this needs to be done internally within the Board of Elections. I just don't see it at all. There's also three part-time administrative assistants with a collective cost of $53,352 a year to be tasked with maintaining the county's voter registration database, conducting regular list maintenance, and absentee-related tasks. They would each work 19 hours a week. The justification for that, the application says, by adding three new casual part-time positions, we are drastically increasing our year-round capacity to provide support to critical registration, absentee, and preparatory processes to ensure a smooth election cycle, relying on temporary staff members. And so those are the major requests that are coming in from the new Hanover County Board of Elections, in regards to the audit, the survey, the research that was done by this outside agency that was, as I noted, paid $30,000 to provide recommendations to new Hanover County as a whole. It is a very interesting process, no question about it. And we are getting some comments coming in this morning on our text line at 910-377-6425. I forgot to mention, include your name and where you're texting from so I can call that out on the show. Text coming in this morning says, Doge would eye all of those extra positions. I'm sure Doge would. And I think when you look at especially the communication job, I think that's the quintessential definition of government bloat, right? There's no reason in a county as large as New Hanover that we need essentially another full-time PIO within the Board of Elections. This is a full-time position. And yes, is there communication that needs to happen between the board and the public? Absolutely. Sure. No arguments, no questions, no issues there at all. I'm in complete and total agreement with that. But folks, we are at a time right now when we need to be looking at government efficiencies. And when you've got a fully staffed communication department, and I don't have the county budget pulled up in front of me, but it is a department that spends hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, has hundreds of thousands of dollars a year worth of salaries that come out of it, they can easily handle PR requests for the Board of Elections. They can easily deal with some of those requests. Now, if they say that they need these full-time positions, I'm liable to believe them. I'm liable to say, okay, I probably agree with you. Now, if they hire these full-time positions and we get to the next election, not the municipal elections, those are so much smaller, but the midterm elections in 2026, and we are still seeing the same outcry, still seeing the same response from these individuals, well, that to me is going to be a huge problem. That's a massive, massive issue. So those are the recommendations. Those are the things brought forward by this outside agency, the Parker Poe law firm who conducted this audit of the Board of Elections. And I look forward to seeing this discussion rise at the next New Hanover County Board of Commissioners meeting. And I look forward to them putting some pressure on Ray Hunter Havens, putting some pressure on the Board of Elections and saying, here's the recommendation. Go through it and give us a timeline and actual benchmarks and metrics as to how these things are being accomplished. When we talk about government being accountable, that's the answer right there. When we talk about government working for the people that it serves, that right there is the answer. That's what needs to be done. We don't just shuffle around the paperwork and, oh, here's a PowerPoint on all of our findings. And anybody have any questions? No, thanks. And then we just move on with our merry lives. That's not how this process needs to go. Big changes need to happen at the new Hanover County Board of Elections. And some of these recommendations seem pretty spot on. And so the question is, will the board actually follow through on them? That's kind of the million-dollar question. We'll keep an eye on it. I'll put a little note down as we keep track of the next new Hanover County Board of or the next new Hanover County Commissioners meeting and see if there's any discussion on that. We'll bring you the details right here on the Nick Craig Show. Turning our attention to some state politics this morning, the General Assembly could soon have a greater involvement in the state's rulemaking process under a new bill filed by North Carolina lawmakers yesterday on Thursday. The North Carolina REINS Act, R-E-I-N-S Act, which is the Regulations from Executive in Need of Scrutiny, pretty great name, aims to strengthen accountability and legislative oversight of regulations enacted by the executive branch by requiring legislative approval for any permanent rule or regulation that's expected to have an economic impact of $1 million or more with a 12-month period. I know I just read a lot there. This is a massive piece of legislation. The North Carolina REINS Act, as it's written right now, would require General Assembly approval of most regulation coming out of the executive branch. When we talk about bureaucracy, most of the bureaucracy that we talk about comes in the form of regulation. You'll remember back last year, there was a huge decision made up at the U.S. Supreme Court level dealing with the, it was called the Chevron Doctrine. And what the Chevron Doctrine, or what the ruling from the North Carolina, or the U.S. Supreme Court said was that agencies like EPA that take part in massive rulemaking operations, not things passed by Congress, not things voted on by the American people, but agencies themselves that essentially pass law. Now, it's not called law because it does not go through the congressional process, but for all intents and purposes, it becomes law, that is no longer appropriate and no longer proper. And that these agencies and these authorities do not have carte blanche rulemaking authority to just do whatever the hell they want and not be able to be fought back against in court, which is what happens right now, or what used to happen before the Chevron Doctrine was revoked. EPA comes up with a rule. Nobody voted on it. Congress didn't approve it. The rule goes into effect. You have a problem with the rule, and there's nothing you can do about it. Because in previous years, the court gave its authority to essentially the agency making the rule. They gave them deference in saying, yeah, well, you guys made the rule. You're the subject matter expert. You're EPA, and this is EPA, tangentially EPA related. So whatever you say is the golden standard, essentially blocking out there any sort of litigation against these overburdensome rules and regulations that come from the bureaucracy, the unelected bureaucracy. So seeing something kind of similar to that here in North Carolina. Lawmakers say the intent of this is not to turn the General Assembly into a regulatory body, but rather to bring transparency and accountability to the regulatory process by preventing rulemaking from crossing a threshold into legislation without legislation itself and without the legislature being involved. One of the lead sponsors, Representative Alan Chesser of Nash County, told the Carolina Journal that the legislation is not motivated by partisan politics, but by a desire to enhance accountability for government regulations that have considerable consequences on the state. He told the Carolina Journal exclusively, quote, "It's not targeting any one party. It's not targeting the governor. Right now, the executive branch in North Carolina is evenly split 5-5 between Republicans and Democrats. So this will equally affect our Republican Council of State as much as it does our Democrat Council of State. Under the current process, rules are typically enacted once approved by the Rules Review Commission, which consists of 10 commissioners appointed by the General Assembly. However, the new proposal adds a step where the General Assembly must review and ratify any rule with substantive economic consequences before it can take effect. The legislation, which is House Bill 402, would make regulatory processes more accessible to the public by adding a layer of oversight that would ensure that lawmakers, rather than unelected officials, make the final decision on regulation that could have widespread economic impacts. So, major, major changes there. The RAINS Act also creates a formal process for individuals to challenge proposed rules. If 10 or more people in general, file an objection, the rule will be reviewed by the legislature before it can take effect. Additionally, the bill mandates that state agencies must provide detailed fiscal notes explaining the economic impacts of proposed rules, further ensuring public awareness and understanding. If passed, the RAINS Act would drastically reshape how North Carolina enacts its regulations, promoting both transparency and public accountability in the state's rulemaking process. Folks, this legislation doesn't have what I like to call, and folks have kind of given me some grief for it in the past, but this does not have any sex appeal associated with it. This is not sexy legislation that makes the 6 o'clock news. This is not legislation that people across the state can understand and actually, you know, read and understand what's going on. If they don't follow politics, they have no idea what's going on here. But in terms of substantial legislation that could have a major impact on state government, it doesn't get any more impactful here than this proposed legislation, House Bill 402. It does not get any more substantial than that. The similar way as I was discussing just a couple of minutes ago with the Chevron Doctrine and the massive impact that that had on Washington, D.C., the massive impact that that had on the bureaucracy and their essential ultimate rulemaking authority, this is essentially the same thing here in North Carolina. So if the governor, if the Council of State, if anybody wants to enact regulation, enact policy, and it's set to have a major economic impact, which, you know, I say major, but we're talking about $1 million over a 12-month period. That's really not that much. Now, let me be clear, $1 million is a lot of money. But if you're enacting any regulation that has impact on even just a couple hundred thousand people, it's very possible that the economic impact will easily be over $1 million over a 12-month period of time, let alone when you impact regulation that would have impact on millions of individuals across the state. There's no question about it that dollar amount immediately hits that $1 million threshold. And now these agencies, before they submit their details to the Rules Commission, will have to provide some financial analysis. This is a huge piece of legislation. It's something that I've got on my bill tracker, on my radar, and it's something that we'll keep a very close eye on right here on the Nick Craig Show. And looking forward to next week, not sure if it's going to happen Monday or Tuesday, we're going to get some small business experts on here to talk about the RAINS Act, talk about this regulatory process, and kind of walk through why this is such an influential, such an impactful piece of legislation. So we'll have that coming up for you next week. Well, it is Pi Day, March the 14th, 3.14. Hopefully you enjoy it and have a great weekend. We'll be tracking everything out of the U.S. Senate today and have all of those details coming up for you Monday morning right here on the Nick Craig Show. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a great weekend. We're back Monday morning at 7 right here on the Nick Craig Show.